goodness, look what's happened in terms of what's been hidden to us coming to the surface.
Yeah.
I mean, look what we know now we didn't know 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Ah, I understand why I am here doing this and why all these things have happened to me, because it was to get me to this point in terms of my understanding so I could do what's coming next. And it's a completely different way of looking at the world and looking at our own lives. That's open to everybody. Everybody. All we need to do is to remove the cause of the problem, and that's preconceived idea, preconceived belief, and the perception of self that we are David Icke, Ethel Jones, or Charlie Smith. We ain't. That's our experience. When we realize that we are infinite consciousness, infinite potential, having that experience, then our sense of limitation starts to dissolve. This is why the personal journey of people doing this and the information that they are uncovering and pursuing and communicating are fundamentally connected. Like a rolling stone. Oh my God, I think I've lost the will to live, Tim. No, I'm talking literally. Look at it, how it's all coming in across the world together. And then tell me that it's being orchestrated by a group of men, mostly men, in dark suits, sitting around a table saying, okay, what's our next move? It ain't. It's bigger than that. It's much bigger than that. It's the only way it could happen if it was bigger than that. If people want to ridicule it or whether they're interested in it, well, you know, that's for them to decide. You know, I'm not here to tell people what to think or tell people what to believe. I'm just here to put information in front of people. Make of it what you will. You come out of the womb, and most people pitch their tent very soon afterwards and say, here and no further. And then other people go a bit further, and they'll be environmentalists, and they'll pitch their tent and say, here and no further. Some people will then go a bit further, and they'll pitch their tent, and they'll say, the 5 cents mainstream conspiracy research, but no further. And then some people go extraterrestrials, pitch no further. But if you haven't got a tent to pitch, you just keep walking, then the adventure goes on.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5. It is the culmination of yet another season of Banal of America Audio. Over 40 guests have graced the stage here on the fifth season of this program. And as is tradition, we are closing the book with an absolutely epic guest and a monumental conversation. Before I preview our highly anticipated season finale, please allow me to break from the normal stylings of this program. Since it is the season finale, I want to make sure I reach out to as many people as possible. And it is time for me to come at you hardcore with the hat in hand, and ask you folks out there who've been enjoying BOA Audio Season 5 throughout the last 9 months to help us out a little bit, throw some change in the bucket, and make a donation to this program. This season has been tumultuous, it has been crazy, and it definitely has been costly. So I would like to get the program out of the red and into the black, or at the very least, break even here on Season 5. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is through help from the awesome BOA Audio listeners. How can you help us out? That's simple. There's two ways to make a donation. You can go to Banal of America, BINALLofAmerica.com, and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's simple and secure. If you want to send us your help via snail mail, there's a way to do that as well. We've got a special P.O. Box set up for you. The address for that is Tim Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. And as we say at the end of the program each week, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Binall of America and BOA Audio to help keep the franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Please help us out if you can. It would be greatly appreciated. Now let's get down to business here on the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5. It is the proverbial showcase of the Immortals. It is our final episode of the season. Each year we try to bring on someone who is a supernova in the world of esoterica, and this year is no different. It is definitely one of the most requested and anticipated interviews in the history of our program, as we proudly welcome a bona fide global esoteric superstar, the incomparable David Icke. Let me tell you a little bit about this interview before we kick things off. It was taped just a few weeks before David Icke embarked on a 10-city, 8-country world tour to discuss his new book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees. And he joins us for an over 2-hour conversation that covers a myriad of different topics. We start things out, of course, by addressing David Icke's infamous reptilian theory. We're going to cover that from a number of different angles, including the furor that continues to surround it, how he feels about being so closely associated with the reptilian theory. He's practically typecast as the reptilian guy, and we'll get his take on critics who read different interpretations into the reptilian theory. Then we're going to delve into his latest work, which sees him allege that the Illuminati agenda is on the verge of crumbling and that the moon is an artificial satellite. We'll look at some of the more important and key moments in his career as an esoteric researcher. Thus, we're going to get into his notorious Wogan interview from 1991, which saw him become a household name in the UK, and we'll find out how that changed him personally and professionally. He'll also reflect on his return to Wogan 15 years later in 2006, as well as his notorious turquoise period from the early 1990s. Beyond that, we'll learn what he thinks about contemporary UFO reports, the stagnation of the 9/11 truth movement, and getting seriously deep, we'll find out what David Icke thinks about the very nature of God. That's just a scratch at the surface. David Icke takes us deep down the rabbit hole here, my friends, and this interview will definitely give you some serious food for thought long after the episode has concluded. For those of you who are unfamiliar with David Icke, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. David Icke is a former professional soccer player, journalist, and network anchorman for the BBC. He was the spokesman in the 1980s for the British Green Party, and since 1990 has been a full-time investigator into who and what is really controlling the world. Describing himself as the most controversial speaker and author in the world, he has written 16 books explaining his position and has attracted a substantial following across the political spectrum. His words are designed to inspire all of us to be who we really are, to fling open the door of the mental prison we build for ourselves, and to walk into the light of freedom. In the spring of 2010, he released his newest book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, and in September of 2010, he launched a worldwide speaking tour, which will feature 10 stops in 8 countries. His website is www.davidicke.com. Pretty simple, all one word, davidicke.com. Check it out. With all that said, I know you've been waiting quite a while to hear this conversation, so without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded on August 4th, 2010. The incomparable David Icke joins us for the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5. As has become custom here on the program, the final episode of the season really is the showcase of the Immortals. In years past, we've talked to Gary McKinnon, Brad Steiger, Jacques Vallée, and John Lear, and this year, joining the pantheon of greats is someone who really is a worldwide phenomenon in this field.
He's written 16 books. His latest book is Human Race, Get Off Your Knees. And, I mean, if you want to know why this guy's the season finale guest, let me tell you about where he's heading over the next few months here. He's going to London on September 11th, Prague September 12th, New York City October 17th, San Francisco October 23rd, Lisbon, Portugal October 30th, Barcelona in November, Amsterdam as well, and then next year he's already lined up Kiev and Mexico as well as LA. So, I mean, come on, folks. This guy is a worldwide phenomenon, and it's a real thrill to talk to him. When I first started this program, I made a list of all the people in Esoterica that I want to talk to, and he was on the list, so I'm very excited to finally get the chance to sit down and talk to him. He is, of course, the incomparable David Icke. David, welcome to BOA Audio.
Thank you, Tim. Pleasure.
Now, I suppose we should start out, of course, with the question that everybody wants to know. As a former football goalkeeper, what happened there in the World Cup, buddy? How did your UK goalkeeper there let that ball slip right through his hands?
I know. They used to call him Cinderella because he'd get missing the ball, you know what I mean? Same as me. I kind of follow football a little bit, but at the periphery, really, because, you know, what I'm doing is, as you know, is
a little more
all-encompassing, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's on the periphery, and how England do, I couldn't care less. I'm not really into that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the nationalism, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, that business, yeah.
Yeah, it seems a little imposed. Yeah, we get that in America here as well. Now, okay, all that joking aside, now let's get down to what I like to call the 400-pound reptile in the room, and that, of course, is, you know, the whole reptilian angle to your research. I know you sort of went down that road starting in 1999. That's been like 11 years ago now, so how do you feel about sort of always having that attached to your stuff? You know, you're always sort of like linked to the reptilian theory. I told people I was going to be interviewing you, and that was like the first thing they mentioned, so it's like, you're sort of like a band that has the one great hit that everybody wants to hear all the time. So, I mean, how do you feel about all that?
I don't feel anything, Tim, really. I mean, you know, if you research something and you conclude that it's the phenomenon is real, then being attached to it is fair enough. You know, see, when I started out on this journey 20 years ago, consciously anyway, my goal was to uncover what was happening in the world, who was really pulling the strings behind the people that appeared to be in power, and what was reality, who are we, what are we doing here, what's this all about, this thing called life. And so my interest from the start was going wherever the information took me. And I don't have any preconceived political ideas, nationalistic ideas, cultural ideas, religious ideas or beliefs, and therefore there was no editing or censorship, if you like, of where I would go based on preconceived idea and preconceived belief. So where it takes me is where it takes me. And if people want to ridicule it or whether they're interested in it, well, you know, that's for them to decide. You know, I'm not here to tell people what to think or tell people what to believe. I'm just here to put information in front of people. Make of it what you will. If you like this bit and that doesn't feel right, well, that's fair enough. If you like it all, well, that's fair enough. If you like none of it, that's equally fair enough. Because, you know, the world is full of people. The whole system is full of people, and so much of the conspiracy research movement is full of people, to a large extent, who are telling people this is what you must believe. We're drowning in that stuff. We don't want any more. We're drowning in religious leaders of various and endless kinds, who are all the same program under different names anyway, saying, if you don't believe this, hell and damnation, you must believe this. If you don't believe this, you're wrong. I mean, that's a load of old rubbish. I mean, what we need to do is to be at peace with ourselves, pursuing information wherever it may take us, without, oh my God, what will they think of if I talk about this? I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
And also be at peace in the same way, Tim, of saying, well, we must be at peace with how people receive that information. So if how people react to what I put out is entirely up to them. It's none of my business. It's their business. So I'm at peace to go anywhere the information takes me, and I'm at peace with how people receive it. I mean, when you cut away all the kind of programmed reactions
like a software program. Press enter when you put this data in and you get the same reaction from every computer. Once we cut away from that and take a deep breath, you just see how even people who go on and on about censorship and suppression of information, who also jump on people who react against their information. I mean, hold on a second. You know, we're either in favor of the free flow of information and let people have the basic human right of deciding what they think of it, or we're not, and I am. And so I have no problem with being attached to the reptilian thing at all. In fact, quite the opposite, because I would strongly suggest it is a fundamental aspect, a fundamental foundation to what is actually behind the families that increasingly demonstrably, are running the global economic, political, business, and media system.
Okay. Now, I was looking at some of, I shudder to admit it, but I was looking at Wikipedia to get sort of a more rounded idea of what other people are saying, you know, and I found it interesting, you know, that there's sort of like interpretations of your work here, especially the reptile part, where people say, you know, this kind of took me by surprise, where it's a Swiftian allegory, which or that you don't even really necessarily believe, like, the reptile part, that you're using it as a metaphor for something else. But that is that the case, or do you straight up, you know?
Oh, my God. I think I've lost the will to live, Tim. No, I'm talking literally. And when you read my books and the mass of detail that I've written about this to suggest what people are, a few people are suggesting, and they have every right to do it. I mean, the right to be wrong is a fundamental right, you know. Without the right to be wrong, we don't have freedom. So that's fine, but you know, it takes on ludicrous proportions when you read what I say and the detail that I write about. Of course, I'm talking literally. If I wasn't, I would say so, because, you know, I passed a point a long time ago when I went through staggering levels of ridicule in this country, in Britain, in the early 1990s, where I couldn't walk down any street in Britain without being laughed at by most of the people. I would turn on the television, a comedian only had to say my name to get a laugh. There wasn't a joke necessary. And what that did, all part of my journey, was clean me out of that prison that most people live in, which is fear of what other people think of you. That's what stops people speaking their truth. It stops people living their life as they want to live it, because it's outside of the norms that other people accept. And so going through that, if you like, cleansing of that prison has left me completely at peace with whatever anybody says about me. I really couldn't care less, because I've learned over the years, Tim, that what they're saying today, they'll say something different tomorrow. So why bother about what they say today? You know, it doesn't matter to me what they say. And, you know, I know what I'm saying, I know what I mean when I'm saying it, and if other people want to interpret it in their own way, well, that's fair enough. Like I say, the right to be wrong is a fundamental human right, which must be protected.
Absolutely, yeah. Just to be clear, I presumed you were speaking literally, but I kind of wanted to speak to these strange sort of interpretations of your stuff. It's sort of interesting that people do that.
Well, I think what it is, Tim, one of the things is that, you know, when you look at most people's journey from what we call cradle to grave, the range of perception of what is possible is absolutely shockingly narrow in most people, because the system has been set up to keep them there. If you're a few and you want to control the vast majority, you have to suppress the range and expansion of consciousness and awareness and sense of possibility. And if you want to keep people in that prison where they think what is possible is a fraction of what is actually possible, then of course what you have to do is suppress information about what is going on, what is possible. And when you do that, you get people going through their lives, dismissing things that are actually true because they are too fantastic for them to accept. And so they dismiss it by reflex action, like the reptilian thing. That's a load of rubbish, mate. How much research have you done on this? I don't have to. It's rubbish. You see, if you can take people down a journey through their lives, and you can, this is fundamental to the whole thing, and you can keep them in ignorance of the nature of reality itself, i.e. that this world is not physically real, it's a holographic illusion, and therefore all the things that people say, that's impossible, you can't do that in a solid world, mate. You can't shapeshift from a human to a reptilian, just one solid body to a solid body, mate, you can't do it. Rubbish. But when you start to realize that actually beyond that kind of version of the world that the system gives us, and insists through threat of ridicule and dismissal if we don't accept it, actually is the real nature of reality, which is this world that we think is so solid, actually isn't solid at all. And when people say to me, you can't shapeshift between a solid human body and a solid reptilian body, well, I hold my hand up. Of course you can't, and I'm not saying that. But when you start to understand the illusory nature of reality and how the physical is not physical at all, then suddenly you start to understand how the apparently incredible and ridiculous and bizarre is perfectly logically explainable. Let me go down that road with the reptilians and the shapeshifting. Okay. What I'm saying is that this reality is manipulated by reptilian entities and others, but they seem to overwhelmingly take a reptilian form, that operate just outside of the frequency range that the human senses can decode, because that's what it is. You know, I'm sitting here now, and all the radio and television stations broadcasting to this area are in the same space that I am occupying now. Yeah. I can't see them, they can't see each other, because they're on different wavelengths. I mean, the wavelengths of the radio stations are coming through this wall to my radio. How can they do that? Because they're on a completely different wavelength, and therefore the twain shall never meet, because they're too far apart on the dial. And we are living in the equivalent of a television station, if you like, which the human body computer, as I call it, decodes, and there's a frequency range that it can decode, and therefore we're, if you like, on BBC One television. Now, BBC Two and BBC Three and ITV and CBS and NBC are all sharing the same space as the BBC One, which I can perceive because that's the wavelength I'm on, but I'm not aware of them. And if I was on their station, I wouldn't be aware of the one that I'm on now. You know, when you're on a radio station, say Radio 1, and then you go to Radio 2, Radio 1 doesn't cease to exist just because you've moved the dial to Radio 2. It goes on broadcasting. It's just that you're not on its wavelength anymore. Therefore, what we call the world is actually just a range of frequencies, a very narrow range of frequencies, actually, which the human body computer is decoding. Now, just outside of the range that we can decode, and indeed in the same space, is all the other existences, worlds, realities in all infinity. And just outside of this one, in frequency terms, is this realm, this reality, where these reptilians operate. And they have to manipulate this world overwhelmingly through humans that are in this world, that are in this frequency. For instance, if you see these situations that you see from time to time in scientific laboratories, where the scientists are working with material which is too dangerous to interact with directly. So the material is in a tank, and they're outside the tank, and they put their hands down these big gloves that go inside the tank, and so they're outside the reality, if you like, but they can manipulate inside the reality through these gloves. Well, the reason that the Illuminati, this network of manipulation within our reality, is so obsessed with bloodline, and why the ancient accounts all over the world constantly refer to the interbreeding between the, quote, gods and humans to create hybrid bloodlines, which have been perpetuated right to this day, is because they are a specific vehicle, a hybrid vehicle that allow these entities to manipulate this reality from overwhelmingly outside this reality. And everything, we talk about DNA and cells and genetics, but what like everything is, including this wall in front of me, at its core is vibration. It's a waveform phenomenon. And therefore, DNA in its makeup is a vibrational phenomenon, and just as everything is. And so what you've got with these hybrid bloodlines is a which is overwhelmingly part reptilian and part human, is a vibrational compatibility in these particular bloodlines, these Illuminati bloodlines, with these entities operating just outside of human sight and this human reality that we decode. Therefore, the ability to control the mental and emotional faculties and processes and decisions and behavior of these hybrid bloodlines is much more powerful because of the much more powerful vibrational connection than it is with the general population. So what they've set up over the period that this has been going on is a network of bloodlines that have this vibrational connection to these entities, and a secret society network that manipulates these particular bloodlines into the positions of power and influence. And in doing so, you're actually putting these reptilian entities into these positions of power and influence. But because we're only decoding within the range of human sight, we're only decoding the hybrid human level. We're not decoding the entities that possess and overshadow and dictate the behavior and perceptions of these particular bloodline families. And one of the things that you find when you research this and you follow these bloodlines, one of the things that comes up again and again is the way that these bloodline families are involved in what we call Satanism, ritual sacrifice, blood rituals, and all the rest of it, going on, in the shadows and in secret all over the world on a scale that beggars belief. And what they're doing with those rituals is actually interacting with these entities. I've talked to people all over the world who have been at some of these rituals, and they've seen them manifest. I mean, and it's not one or two, it's loads. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've been to 50 countries. I've seen the common themes build and build and build and build. And so if you are looking at one of these hybrid bloodlines, at certain times, particularly when they're in rituals and they're dealing in blood drinking, that seems to make this shape-shifting happen. And also when they are in states of high emotion or high anger and fury, it seems to happen too. What it does is that charge. When you feel high emotion or what have you, you can almost feel an electrical charge going through your body. Well, that electrical charge, if it's powerful enough, can break up the vibrational state of the hybrid and the possessing reptilian, so that the reptilian level comes into this reality. And at that moment, you can read it, you can decode it. And to the person observing, someone one minute is a human, next minute is a reptilian, and then is human again. And it's not a physical thing, because the human body's not physical, solid, and neither is the reptilian. It's all energy. It's the way we decode it that makes it appear to be solid. So the more you understand about the nature of reality and its illusory nature, the more the apparently fantastic becomes explainable.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what I find particularly interesting, too, about your stuff, is that you seem to have you know, it starts with the reptilian stuff, but then it moves into this sort of information theory stage, if you will, this beyond the five senses, this dimensionality aspect, which I find pretty interesting. So I'm glad you sort of fleshed all that out so we can catch all the people up that weren't familiar with exactly where your work has gone. Now, talking about this new book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, I found it interesting that the book is actually pretty optimistic, which is surprising for a conspiracy book or anything in the conspiracy genre. You don't see optimism much in this realm of research. So, you know, what gives you the reason to be optimistic and have the feeling that we're on the cusp of this golden age of consciousness, as you've been talking about?
Well, you know, it's there's so many different aspects to bring together before you know, certain things can be fully appreciated. And one of the key things that people need to appreciate is this whole idea of illusory reality. And the fact that we live, as I put it, in an equivalent of a cosmic internet. And what I mean by that is this. I have a computer in front of me now, and if there was the wireless internet in this room, I would look around me and I couldn't see the wireless internet. I can just see the room. I can't see anything.
Yeah.
But I would, if I could put this computer on and tune it to that wireless internet, i.e. log onto the internet, suddenly a whole collective reality, which is accessible by people anywhere in the world, virtually apart from the firewalled areas like China, it comes on my screen. It's a whole collective reality. And when people talk about, well, you know, if we create our own reality, how come we look out and we all see the same car going past and the same house across the road?
Yeah.
It's because the basis of our reality is like the wireless internet. It's information which we're decoding, and that we decode it into what is the equivalent of our computer screen, which goes on in the brain. This world that we think is outside of us, and of course, you know, it constantly seems to be like that, actually only exists inside the brain in the form that we're experiencing it. And so we are like the computer on the desktop decoding this cosmic internet, and then we are deciding, as we do with the you know, the internet we have, what in effect, what websites are we going to go to? In other words, where am I going to go in my life? What interests am I going to have? What do I make of this website? What do I think of this situation? What do I not think of this situation? And that's where we put our unique spin on it. We have different opinions and different views, but the base reality is there all the time, the background reality, just like the World Wide Web. Now, this reality, I would suggest, this is what I'm saying in the book, goes through a cycle, and it's a vibrational cycle. And as this vibrational cycle goes through, it changes the information that we're receiving, that base background information. And because it's going in a cycle, it seems you can symbolize it, if you like, as a loop. I mean, there are, you know, people that I've talked about, I've had a book about this, that name too, called The Time Loop. It's like a time loop. It goes around through a cycle and then comes back, not necessarily exactly to the start, but pretty much. And this is where you see in the ancient world all these legends and accounts about the cycular nature of time. In Asia and the Indian culture, they have the Yugas. I mean, the Mayans talked about the cycular nature of time. And what I'm saying is that this cycle, which in our version of time, which is an illusion too, is goes over a vast period, goes through different cycles. Some cycles are really expansive, where consciousness is expanding and awareness expands, and then other parts of the cycle, it's more challenging. It's more about limitation. It's more about suppression and experiencing that part of the cycle. And there comes a point, obviously, as you go around, where one part of this cycle is replaced by another. One yuga is replaced by another. And when I first had my mind-opening, mind-blowing experiences in 1990 and that period. One of the first things I kind of started to learn by a sequence of synchronistic events and experiences, shall we say, was that there was a new cycle coming because there was a vibrational change coming that was going to wake people up from their amnesia. It was going to have the effect also of bringing to the surface all that had remained hidden up to this point, so we could see what we've not been able to see going on in the world up to that time. Now, in 1990, Tim, there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever of any awakening of consciousness. There was certainly no evidence that all this hidden stuff was coming to the surface. Yeah. But it was so strong in my life and so strong in the synchronicity of my life, and it was coming to me, that the first book I wrote after my, you know, head blew off, actually called Truth Vibrations. And it was called Truth Vibrations after this vibrational change that I was learning about. Now, 20 years later, let's look at it again. Look what's happened in terms of people awakening to a new sense of self and the world. And my goodness, look what's happened in terms of what's been hidden to us coming to the surface.
Yeah.
I mean, look what we know now we didn't know 5 years ago, 3 years ago, never mind 15 and 20. And so what we're looking at, I would suggest, is living through a period where we're on the cusp, where one yuga, for want of a term, one period of this cycle is which is based on suppression and limitation, and what people might call a dark period, and we're moving out of that into a period which will be about a massive expansion of consciousness and awareness and understanding and perception of self and the world, seeing the unity of everything rather than seeing everything as divided and apart from everything else. But of course, there's a point where the two are basically existing together. There's going to come a tipping point where the new epoch, the new energy, will become the dominant one. And that's not too many years ago away, I would suggest. But at the moment, we're still in a period where, up to this point, the previous yuga energy is still dominant, though losing its dominance as with everyone that starts to wake up and perceive life in a different way. And so people, and I completely understand this, look at what's happening in the world now, and I'm kind of monitoring it and tracking it and everything on my website every day, where the control system it seems to be getting more and more power and all the rest of it in so many areas and pushing itself on. What I'm saying in the book, and I'm saying here, is that we can read that another way, and that is that we are in the process of seeing the control system's death throes, where it's throwing everything it can at us like a cornered rat to try to hold on to a power structure which is in its dying days. You see, these people, Tim, these entities, they don't want to be on public display.
Yeah.
They would much rather go on as they have in the past, controlling covertly, where people are controlled without realizing, the extent to which they're controlled. Some people they're controlled at all, and certainly not understanding the ultimate force behind that control. That's what they want, because you can go like that forever. But what's happening, and I talk about this in the book, that these entities, because they're not actually in the timeline that we're experiencing, they can see down our timeline. They can see things to a certain extent further along the timeline than we can. They have known for a considerable amount of time that this energetic change, this awakening, was coming. And what they've been planning for, and that's why it's at this time of all times when the control system is throwing everything at us that this awakening is happening. That's not a coincidence. Those two things are completely connected, because the control system is trying to batten down the hatches and hold the dike against this vibrational change. And of course, it's whistling in the dark, because of course you can't stop this energetic change. It's going to happen. But it's trying to, and for the next few years, it's going to seem as if the control system is going to prevail. And then the whole thing's going to come down because we're going to reach the point where this new energy, these truth vibrations, the energy of expansion and of the new epoch is going to become the dominant one. And I think we're seeing some signs of that all the time. Well, I am anyway, as I see people wake up who I thought would never wake up in this lifetime. Yeah. And so we are at a very amazing time where we are living through this epoch change. And the more that we stop cooperating with the system and stop acquiescing with it, the less extreme it will be before it actually comes down, because it is coming down. But, you know, if we just walk away and do nothing and just acquiesce, yes sir, no sir, then it's going to get even more extreme before it actually comes down, which is going to be very, very unpleasant indeed.
But what you're saying is eventually, no matter what, this police state, New World Order, whatever you want to call it, Illuminati, all that stuff, is bound to fail because of this impending golden age of consciousness.
Yes, I'm absolutely saying that. Like I say, it's no accident or coincidence that the police state, not just the police state covertly, because for a long time we've been controlled covertly, for an enormous amount of time, of course. But, I mean, what I'm talking about is it's now becoming blatantly obvious to more and more people. I mean, never mind the reptilian thing, never mind this energetic stuff that I'm talking about. Let's just go on the basic everyday experience of people. More and more people are saying, I mean, I know a police officer, quite a high one actually, who's saying, all our freedoms are being taken away. It's incredible. It's terrible. And so even they're starting to see it now. And it's on public display because they are having to become more and more extreme in their efforts to stop this awakening happening, because the awakening is happening. See, everything connects once you start to see these basic themes. We are being bombarded with genetically modified food, with electromagnetic pollution and chemically infested food, because the body computer is a electrochemical organism on one level, and therefore it has an optimum electrochemical balance to best decode reality in its sharpest, most expansive form. And so all these things are constantly destabilizing the electrochemical balance, so it does not function. It's like a computer with a virus in it. It's not working properly. It's not decoding reality. It's not decoding information in the way that it could. This is also one of the key reasons, not the only reason, there are many, but one of the key reasons why the system is designed to create maximum fear, maximum stress, maximum anxiety, maximum worry. It's because those low vibrational, imbalanced emotions also knock the body computer decoding system out of kilter. And that's what they're trying to do. It sounds a very negative thing, but actually when you think about it, it's a very, very positive thing. When you take it from this perspective, look at all the different multi-levels that they're having to manipulate us through and all the different things they're having to throw at us. And that tells you something, and that is that humans in their true form, in their true expression of potential, are fantastic genius. And of amazing potential and amazing abilities and amazing potential for expansion of awareness and seeing beyond the illusion. And that's why they have to throw these things at us all the time, and why they're having to throw more and more and more all the time is because the awakening is getting stronger and stronger and stronger all the time, and they're terrified of it.
Very interesting, very interesting. Like I said, Surprisingly optimistic. Are you sure you're a conspiracy theory researcher or not? I don't know here with this optimism, but I'll take it.
Well, you know, when I was going through my mass awakening in 1990-91, and the truth vibration stuff came up and all that was going to happen, one of the key themes was, this is not an if and it's not a maybe. It's basically a done deal. This epoch change is going to happen. The question for humanity is this, I was told. How are you going to interact with this change? You know, are you going to stand in the river, which is getting faster and faster in its flow by the day, and stand there and say, I ain't moving. I'm going to stay how I was before. I'm going to hold my status quo. I ain't changing. Or are you going to get on the airbed and just flow with it and enjoy the ride, the amazing change and expansion of consciousness and awareness and potential that is there for the taking? And of course, you know, you can look at the world, Tim, and you can see those people who have got on the airbed and are flowing with it, and you can see the people who are still standing there saying, I ain't moving. And funnily enough, there's quite a number of those people, I ain't moving, within conspiracy research. And it takes the form of, and I'm not knocking this at all, I'm just making an observation.
Yeah.
It takes the form of, I will only accept there's a conspiracy based on human beings, the five sense level, political intrigue, greedy corporations, and greedy families who want to control the world for their own greed. I ain't going any further than that. And by the way, my religion has to be part of this as well, or I ain't going there either. And what we are being challenged to do in this epoch change, this energetic change, and therefore this opportunity to expand consciousness, is to realize that we've been living in a box of perception so unbelievably small compared with what there is to see and what there is to perceive. And basically, it's like you can go on the internet in most countries of the world, still, just, and you can go anywhere you want on the internet. But you go into China, and they firewalled off vast areas of the internet that Chinese people can't access because the authorities there don't want them to get access to that information because it will change their perception of the Chinese authorities. And that's not just symbolic, it's a very strong analogy of what's happened to humanity. We've been manipulated to live our lives in a tiny, tiny firewalled off box of reality, and we have accepted through that there are very strict limitations to everything, limitations to possibility. It's like people say, look, this guy, mate, all right, he's just said he saw this UFO appear out of nowhere and then disappear, okay? He's on something. Don't you talk to me about that. That's ludicrous. Now, if you're in the box and you've gone through this process of allowing your sense of possibility to be concertinaed like that, to be limited like that, then to you, that's impossible. But when you get even the basics of this reality, which is a frequency range, then something coming into this frequency range, I can see it, and because it came into this frequency range from another reality, it appeared to appear out of nowhere. All it did was change its vibrational state to sync with this one. Therefore, I can now see it with my decoding mechanism called eyes and brain, and then it goes back and reverts to its original vibrational state, frequency state, and therefore it's gone outside of my ability to decode it, and to my perception, to my observation, it has disappeared into nowhere. Now, you know, this is what I'm talking about earlier, Tim, when if you can suppress people's sense of what's possible, they will laugh in the face of the truth because they'll think it's too fantastic to be real.
Yeah, exactly. Another aspect to the new book that I found interesting is you sort of brought the moon into all this and suggest that, for lack of a better term, the moon's sort of like the headquarters for these reptilians. So my first thought is, should we blow up the moon? I'm just
well. well, I think that would have a few. Rather large implications. No, I'll tell you where it came from. And really, I need to kind of talk about some of the stuff that happened to me 20 years ago.
That's fine.
To get people to see where I'm kind of coming from. When I was a television presenter and a national spokesman for the British Green Party through the 1980s, towards the end of the 80s, I had this strange experience that got more and more powerful. And that is that when I was in a room alone, suddenly they didn't seem to be, I didn't seem to be alone. There seemed to be another presence there. And over a period of a year, it built up and built up and built up until eventually I was sitting on the side of a bed in a hotel in London when I was working for the BBC, and I said into the space of the room, if there's something there, would you please contact me, because you're driving me up the wall. And about, I don't know, a matter of not long later, days rather than weeks later, a series of events happened which took me to a psychic. And all I did was I went along, because I've got rheumatoid arthritis, and I went along to her and I said, look, I've got rheumatoid arthritis. I'm not taking drugs for it because I want my body to last me a lifetime, a long lifetime. And so can you do your hands-on healing? Told her nothing else. Didn't tell her what had been happening to me or anything. So I went a couple of times, got the healing and all the stuff, and then I went the third time, and suddenly, in the middle of it, I felt like a spider's web on my face, like a cobweb. And this kind of hit me because I'd read in this lady's book, who was part of the synchronicity of me getting to her, that sometimes when other levels of reality, consciousness, whatever you want to call them, are trying to lock into you, you sometimes feel like a spider's web on your face.
Okay.
Anyway, about 15, I never said anything to her about what I was feeling. I just thought, oh, God, that's that spider's web I feel. Anyway, about 15 seconds later, she kicks her head back and says, my God, I'm going to have to close my eyes for this one, and starts saying that she was seeing this figure in her mind and was giving me information. And it was that I was going to go out. I mean, just think of it, Tim. At this time, I'm presenting sport for the BBC and news, I'm a national spokesman of the Green Party, and suddenly this lady's telling me that she's being told to tell me I'm going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets. Where I'm going with this is one of the things, I was told a load of things at that time, and again in another meeting with her a week later, which have all happened, apart from one thing, they've all happened, or are happening. And two of the things that I was told was this. This is 20 years ago, nearly. So it is 20 years ago. Sometimes he will say things and wonder where they came from. They will be our words. And knowledge will be put into his mind, and at other times he will be led to knowledge. Well, we have a famous advertisement in this country for household stuff. And the punchline is, it does exactly what it says on the tin. And I have to say that over the last 20 years, what I've just said has done exactly what it said on the tin.
Yeah.
What has happened is that I've had these kind of, if you like, insights out of nowhere about something, and then all the, if you like, five sense level of research has come to me after that initial insight. This has been going on for the best part of 20 years, and so I recognize it. I recognize it when the energy in the room changes and suddenly some insight comes in. So what happened with the moon, Tim, was I was writing this book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, and I wasn't incorporating the moon at that time. And I sat down at this very computer where I'm sitting now, and the energy in the room changed very demonstrably. And what suddenly went through my mind very clearly was, the moon's not real. The moon's a construct, right? So I sat there and I thought, well, I've been here many times before, but the moon's not real. Let's have a look at this. So what I did, expecting to find nothing, is I typed in various words into a search engine based on that kind of theme. And within, oh God, no more than a minute, 2 minutes, up it came, a book called Who Built the Moon by two researchers called Christopher Knight and Alan Butler. And I sent for it, and I read it immediately, and I was kind of taken aback by a lot of the information in it, because it was saying the moon cannot be real. And I'm thinking, well, that's exactly what the insight came. So I then, of course, as you do, I turned my focus on this. And as with the process over the last 20 years, after the insight, the five sense information comes my way pretty quickly. And one of the things that they say in this book is the moon is bigger than it should be, apparently older than it should be, much lighter in mass than it should be. It occupies an unlikely orbit and is also so extraordinary that all existing explanations for the presence for its presence are fraught with difficulties, and none of them could be considered remotely watertight. And it's an interesting thing that relates to many things here, because we're born into this world. This is where the box and the limitation of perception of possibility comes in. We're born into this world, and it's like, well, this is how the world is, mate, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is just a quick aside, but an important one. This is why we are so, the generations alive today, older generations alive today, are playing such a very, very important role. Because we have still the ability to compare what the world was like before to what it is now and becoming now. Young people born into the world now are born into the world of the police state. They're born into schools with cameras all over the place. They're born into schools where they're giving fingerprints for their school meals. To them, this surveillance and control is, well, that's the way it is, mate. So, you know, and it's the same with the moon. It comes up, it goes through its cycle, and well, of course, it's the moon, mate. Of course, it's always been there. Well, when you start to do the research, and I do a lot of stuff in the book on it, you find that actually there are extraordinary anomalies relating to the moon. Like, it's much bigger than it should be. I mean, it's been postulated by some scientific writers that if the Earth had a satellite at all, and with its magnetic field, that is far from certain, it should be maybe 30 miles around. This one's 2,160, miles around. It's massive. I mean, some scientists even talk not about a moon planet relationship, but a dual planet relationship.
Yeah.
Then you ask the question, where did the moon come from? And then you find something else that you come across again and again and again in different areas. That what is accepted as scientific fact actually turns out to be a scientific theory. The official theory, which has been accepted as fact by repetition, like most fact is that the Earth was hit in its earliest form times of formation by a Mars-type planet, and a great chunk broke off and became the Moon. When the physics of that didn't work out, they called the first one the whack theory. They then came up, when the physics didn't work out, with the double whack theory, which is that this Mars-type planet hit the Earth and then came back and gave it another go, you know, the old 1-2. And, you know, it's talk about desperate. And it's interesting, too, as I continue with this research, I didn't know this at the time, but, you know, two Russian scientists in the 1970s wrote a detailed paper about the fact that the moon is a construct, and that it's been hollowed out, like a hollowed out planetoid, and it's become like a gigantic space vehicle to, you know, traverse the cosmos. And they say that much of the inside of the moon was hollowed out and became the outside of the moon. And it's interesting that some scientists have said about the moon, it's inside out. What's on the surface of the moon should really be on the inside. Another scientist, Erwin Shapiro from the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, said the best explanation for the moon is observational error. The moon doesn't exist, because by the laws of physics and all the rest of it, it shouldn't exist in that place, in that size. And another thing that the Who Built the Moon book points out very, very well indeed is the extraordinary relationship, geometrical relationship between the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun. And people need to just read that book, or, you know, kind of read Human Race Got Off Your Knees to get into the detail. But I tell you, the relationship is fantastic, and it only works between the Moon, the Earth and the Sun, not with the other planets. And the key to making it work is the Moon. What then happened as this was unfolding is I got on to the Oracle, Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman who's well into his 80s now, and is the most extraordinary, brilliant expert in all the different legends and laws and accounts of ancient Africa. Researching, you know, the background to all this, researching the history of all this, one of the places they have missed massively so often is Africa. The African legends are incredible in the way that if you take their symbolism and bring it into the modern world, you can see that they are talking about things that scientists have now understood. For instance, the Zulus, and I found the Zulu legends, I mean, Credo's a Zulu, I found the Zulu legends over the years to be extraordinarily accurate in this way. Their words for time and space are virtually identically the same word, because they understood eons ago that time and space were, in effect, the same thing. Anyway, I get on to Credo Mutwa, and I say nothing to him about all the stuff that I'm putting together on the Moon, and I'm being very surprised by it as I'm coming across it. Crikey, I didn't realize that about the Moon. And I just said to him, can you tell me any Zulu legends about the Moon? And off he goes. Yes, Mr. David, he said, and away he went. I mean, the man's a library on legs. And he suggests, we say that the Moon is an egg. And again, you know, anthropologists are people that go, they say the Moon's an egg. They're very primitive people. why do they symbolize the Moon as an egg? Because they say the Moon was hollowed out and turned into a craft which was rolled across the heavens, as their legend goes, to the Earth, and when it arrived, it created devastation on the Earth, as it would a body that large getting that close, and it made the Earth move. Now, when you look at all these ancient accounts all over the world about the great cataclysm, what the Bible calls the great flood, one of the common themes is the Earth turned over. Now, if the Moon came in to where it is now, the Earth would turn over. The Earth is spinning at the angle it's spinning, and it's spinning at the speed it's spinning because of the influence of the Moon. The Moon has massive influence clearly over the tides and water, and the human body is massively overwhelmingly made up of water. So, of course, then you look at the influence of the Moon, even the Moon without any of the other stuff that I'm talking about that's going on inside it, and that influence on the human hormonal systems is fundamental. And then what Credo said, he said, I said, well, who was behind this Moon then, acting ignorant? Because the one thing I don't want to do is to lead people. That's the last thing you want to do when you're researching this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said that the legends say that the Moon was brought here hundreds of generations ago by two brothers, Wawani and Umpanku, who were leaders of the reptilians, what the Zulus call the Chitahuri, the children of the python or the children of the serpent, also known as the Talkers. And these two brothers, Wawani and Umpanku, the Zulu legends go, were known as the Water Brothers and had scaly skin like a fish. Now, then you go to ancient Sumer and you see the stories of the Anunnaki and the two brothers, Enlil and what was the other one? Enki. Mm-hmm. Two brothers, and Enki was very much symbolized as relating to water, as a water god, and was given another name to emphasize that. And so what you're looking at is the same story told by the Zulus about these two reptilian brothers as you get in Sumer, ancient Sumer, thousands of years BC, in what we now call Iraq, also formerly Babylon as well. You get that same story told in southern Africa. And the Zulu legends say that Wawani and Umpanku stole the Moon in the form of an egg from the great fire dragon, emptied out the yolk until it was hollow, and then rolled the Moon across the sky to the Earth and caused, as I say, cataclysmic events. And when you look at the the scale of the influence of the moon on life on Earth. It supports the Zulu claim that the arrival of the moon fundamentally changed life on Earth in every single way. Interestingly, one of the Zulu legends about the Chitahuri, the reptilians, is that they threatened humanity in ancient times, a long time ago, that if they did not do what they were told and didn't serve the gods as they were perceived, then the gods would move the moon and cause great catastrophe. So, you know, I could go on and on and on about this, but you know, the book is 355,000 words because there's so many elements to connect together before the apparently fantastic becomes logically possible and credible. I can say this in one line: what we know about the moon or think about the moon in our everyday lives without researching it is nothing like what there is to know about the moon.
So let's sort of move ahead a little bit. Let's say this: we enter this golden age of consciousness, as you say. We break out of the five-sense reality. At that point, are the reptilians exposed for what they are? And what do they do? Do they leave? Do we kill them? I mean, what happens then, do you think?
Well, I'm not the oracle sitting cross-legged on the mountain saying I know it all, and if I was saying that, then people should just walk away.
Yeah.
We're all trying to work it out. But a very good analogy, again, we have to keep coming back to this because it is an excellent analogy for the reality we're living in. The computer system, what appears on the screen is dictated by the information that the computer is decoding. And this reality is that, it's information. Everything is information being decoded. This wireless internet, this cosmic internet, is information which we're decoding. And in the same way, the meridian lines of the body in the acupuncture system have what the Chinese call qi energy going through these meridian lines. And that is actually photon energy, like it's the photon energy from the sun. We are fundamentally connected to the sun. That's where the information comes from, in the form of photons. That's what we're decoding. And so going through the meridian lines of the body is information. That's what it is. And what they found, of course, this is what acupuncture is based on, is when this information, this energy, is not moving around the body at optimum speed, it's too slow or it's too quick, the body becomes ill in some way. It becomes diseased, disharmonized, because the flow is not in harmony. And what acupuncture does through needles and other techniques is bring that qi energy, that information flow, back into harmony. In the same way that when we get a virus in our desktop computer, what's the first thing we say? My computer's slow today. What's the matter with my computer? It's so slow. Why? Because the information is not passing around the computer to the optimum speed for the computer system to work and decode most efficiently, and therefore on the screen things start to become distorted and disharmonized. So the information and the state of the information and the type of information dictates fundamentally 100% what goes on the computer screen. And bringing the analogy back to the reality that we're experiencing, the information that we are decoding through the body computer, it dictates what is the reality that we are perceiving and experiencing. Now, this energetic change I'm talking about, these truth vibrations, what we're actually looking at in this foundation state is a change of information. As this reality goes through its cycle of changing experience, it goes through clearly a changing cycle of information. That's what brings about the different epochs, the different yugas. And so as these truth vibrations start to impact themselves more and more, and we attune ourselves to them more and more, as we detune ourselves from the energy of the old epoch, in other words, we stop standing in that ever fast flowing river saying I ain't moving, and we get on the airbed and say I'm going to flow with this. In other words, We drop our belief systems and our preconceived ideas that say that can't be, and we open our minds to all possibility. That's what getting on the airbed means in actual experience, opening your mind to all possibility, flowing where life takes you and information takes you. As that happens, then life on this planet is going to be transformed. Life in terms of the moon, the reptilian aspect of it, the control system, it's all going to be transformed because the information epoch on which the control system and this reptilian manipulation is an expression of is in its death throes. It's being replaced by a new information construct, and therefore the old manifestation of the old energy information is going to fall and disappear, and the new one is going to emerge. Now, how that's going to manifest itself in our detailed experience and all that stuff that we're talking about now, well, we're going to have to have the opportunity and the experience of seeing how that unfolds as it unfolds to a large extent. But for sure, if I change the information on this software disk in my tower here, the information or the reality that appears on my screen must change, and that's what's happening now. And we're in this cusp, like I said earlier, where the two information constructs, the two information epochs are actually existing together at this time. And that's why we're in this tussle and turmoil, and some people are waking up and some people are not waking up and all the rest of it. And that's why we're going to go through this period of great turmoil and upheaval, because you cannot change the energetic construct of a reality and not have a point where there's great upheaval as one replaces the other. And of course, as the information takes over from the previous information, then as it plays out in the decoded world of the physical reality as we perceive it, then that upheaval, that change that's going on, that tussle almost that's going on between one energy and the other one, is going to manifest itself in, quote, physical events, collective and individual, that are going to be expressions of that energetic change that's taking place in the waveform vibrational level of this reality, which is the foundation of this whole reality. It's waveform. The reality we see as physical is just the holographic decoded manifestation of that information in the waveform. For instance, when you are creating holograms, the kind of holograms that we buy in the shops, what they do is they have a laser beam, and part of the laser beam is deflected onto a photographic print, holographic photographic print. Other part of the laser beam is played across whatever they want to photograph holographically, and then that is deflected back to the photographic print, where it collides with the other half of the laser beam that's pretty much gone straight there without going across what they're photographing. And on the photographic print, this collision creates what they call a interference pattern. And when you see them, they're like fingerprints. They're waveform. That's what a holographic print looks like. It's waveform. And you say to someone, what's that? And they go, I don't know. It's just wavy lines, mate. And then you get another laser and you fire it at that interference pattern on that photographic holographic print. And suddenly, apparently miraculously, a three-dimensional form, that which has just been photographed, appears in front of your eyes. And the best of them, especially the digital ones they're doing now, are so solid you would believe that they could not possibly be an illusory hologram. Anyway, happening with that situation with the hologram is that the information encoded in the waveform on the holographic print is read by the laser into a holographic, apparently three-dimensional form. And that is what the body computer is doing all the time, taking waveform information and turning it into apparently physical things that we are perceiving as the world as we perceive it every day. Now, this answers one of the great mysteries that I see quantum physicists have pondered on for a long time. how can a particle take particle and waveform at the same time? How is that possible? How can a particle be waveform and a waveform be a particle at the same time?
Yeah.
Dead simple. When you fire the laser at the waveform on the information on the holographic print, and it manifests that holographic three-dimensional illusion as a result. When the hologram manifests itself, the waveform information construct doesn't disappear. The two exist at the same time. One is the information level, the waveform. The other one is the decoded manifestation level, which is the hologram. They appear at the same time. And that's what is happening in our reality as well. There's the information level, waveform. There's the decoded level, particle, holographic. When you, again, you know, we've been talking for quite a time already, Tim. And when you get to this point, now you start to go back to the start of when we were chatting, and you start to realize, hold on a second, shape-shifting is much more straightforward and understandable now than it was when we thought it was shifting from a solid human form to a solid reptilian form and back again. Because the only place the shape-shift takes place is actually in your decoded head, your decoded brain. Because what the body computer does is it takes waveform information, vibrational information. The five senses turn that into electrical information, which is the same information, different form, which is then communicated to the brain, and the brain decodes that information from the electrical into the digital, into the holographic. So when I'm looking at a human form, I appear to be looking at a solid form because through this decoding process, I have decoded the waveform information level of that body into the holographic form. It seems to be a physical body. Now, when there is that energetic shift in these hybrid bloodlines where the reptilian level comes forward, what's happening is the reptilian energetic waveform information level overrides the human level briefly, and to my observation, I'm decoding the waveform information of a human body. Suddenly, I'm now decoding the waveform information of a reptilian body. Now I'm decoding the waveform information of a human body again. And to my decoded observational experiential level of that situation, I'm seeing someone go from physical human, physical reptilian, and back to physical human. None of that's happening except in the decoding in the brain. And that's why when people say you can't go from a physical body to a physical body and back again, I'm the first one to say, of course you can't. But that's not what's happening.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Pardon the interruption, my friends. I don't normally do this, but since it is the season finale, I wanted to cut in the middle of the interview here to reach the folks who do not listen to the beginning of the program as well as the end of the show. I know you're out there, you don't want to hear the banal talking head segments, but since this is the final edition of the program here for Season 5, I want to make a special point of reaching out to all of you and asking for your help in making BOA Audio financially solvent as we close the book on Season 5 and get ready to start putting together Season 6. No matter what you donate, it all helps, folks. It really does, trust me. So please help us out and make a donation. It would be greatly appreciated. And now let's get back to David Icke on the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5.
So, you know, the webpage or whatever is just something that you guys do for fun. Do you have a real job?
Well, that is our job.
Oh.
We don't technically get money for the hours we put in, but it is our job.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.